Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast, episode 172. I'm Jason Snell, your co-host, and across the internet for me, as always, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, and your host, Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason.
We're back again. Somehow it keeps happening. It's weird.
172 times.
How is that possible? And you know what else is back? The power rankings.
They are back. Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, it's not too bad. They were back not that long ago. They're just like, it's here.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to say we could probably both say out loud, or I can certainly say out loud, that maybe the headline writer maybe got a little weird.
Yeah, it's TV Power Rankings, Tim Goodman's Shows to Watch Now, April edition, because now is always changing.
Yeah, now is not really even a kind of the point why we do them. You can watch them anytime.
And sometimes, you know, you do more than one a month, but whatever, you know, it's all good. The key is that the Power Rankings are back.
That's the key, yeah.
And your Shows to Watch list got updated. So we should probably talk about what has changed in it, although not, you know, there's a lot going on. Counterpart, still at number one, makes me very happy.
Yeah, I think that was fun for me because I actually, you know, I mean, I delayed putting these up because the one thing that I wanted to do for sure is I wanted to see, okay, what's going to happen once the Americans are back. And then when it came down to sort of like making the idea of like doing this, I thought, wow, those are three great episodes that I saw to start off. But you're looking at 10 great ones from Counterpart. So I thought, well, you know what? I think they're going to bump up against it at number two, and they with definitely the promise that they could overtake them. But right now, you got to still give it to the Counterpart. I mean, I think you kind of even agreed last week when you said you saw the finale.
Yes, absolutely. I think Counterpart's great. People who want to hear long form discussion about it, we spent more than an hour talking about season one, and that will be this weekend's episode of The Incomparable. So I decided to devote an entire episode to it because I love it. It's great. And yeah, Yay. The Americans returns at number two. But I like that you're just leaving some. It's like a figure skating judge. Like you got to leave a little room there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they are rolling, but there's more to be done. And perhaps they can make that conversion to number one in the next month until the May edition of the Power Rankings.
Until the headline writer can do the May edition. I think the thing that's good here is it's a win-win for everybody, right? If the Americans is number one, then they're continuing their streak. Three episodes in this final season out of the gate were stunning. It's probably the series I look most forward to watching just because it's that good.
Now, you got the A word at number three. That's not too surprising. But coming in at number four is something we talked about last week, BBC America's Killing Eve. Kind of, you called it an unexpected ton of fun, and I think it's also kind of unexpected that it placed this high. I will tell you, I did that podcast about Counterpart last night, and when I walked in back into the living room when we were done, my wife turned to me and said, Killing Eve is really good, because she watched it while I was doing a podcast. So and I said, you know, Tim really liked it, and you really liked it, because here it is at number four.
Yeah, I really liked it. And like, it's funny, these things, I'm sure you've had this happen. These things sit with you a little bit, and then you're like, you know what? I don't know. I think that the interplay between the two stars is great. And I went out of my way in the review, as you saw, and as we linked to it, that to give Jodie Comer credit, because I don't think the show works weirdly, you know, because it's Sandra Oh, such a big star, but the show doesn't work if Jodie Comer is not amazing as the assassin. So it was really good.
Speaking of killing people, Barry is number five.
Yes. And it's funny because I I didn't actually mean to put them in like that. And I had actually put it in the hopper. And a lot of times I'll write down the ones that I'm hoping to get in the list. And I had to make some pretty big, I think I cut four or five or six off the list this time, as far as like shows that are going on that are really still good. Because, you know, in that window of a year, that gives you, when you're flush and everything's actually good, you have a lot of tough cuts to make, even if you keep it at about 20. Barry, I put on the list because it's, even though it's a comedy, it's not, I would actually, even though they've billed it as a comedy, I would revert and say it's a drama working in the 30-minute space. Some of these other shows that are dramatic or dramedies, haven't made the cut. I mean, there are certain episodes of Atlanta that could, and maybe one or two episodes of Master of None. Certainly, Stranger Things, not Stranger Things, but Better Things could be considered probably a little more dramatic than both those shows. So it could be something that was in the competition. But this was the first time I took like an overt series. It was listed as a comedy and moved it into this group. And because it's, like I said, I have seen the whole season. And there's really no doubt in the last two or three episodes that it's a drama.
All right. I feel like the comedy drama divide is on one level just kind of completely artificial at this point, because most comedies have dramatic elements and most dramas have some, boy, I hope, comedic elements. Otherwise, it's going to be just like death to watch it. And you just got to draw your line. I mean, you make your judgment calls. You've made your judgment calls in a bunch of the stories. You did your TV draft thing where you basically like made some rules. And I think you have to do that here, where it's like, what's the primary objective of this show? How does it kind of catalog? And you're like, look, this gets so dramatic, it's hard not to put it in that camp. We could talk about Detectorists in a similar way, right? Like, it's a comedy, but it's also kind of a gentle drama at the same time. Yeah. It's a little bit of both. And, you know, is Silicon Valley or Veep something that we would call a drama? I would not.
No.
It's like, you know it when you see it. I don't know. You could, I would be okay with just dropping it altogether, but it would seem weird for like Veep or Silicon Valley to be competing with some of these shows. I don't know.
Yeah.
Legion, I finally is at number six. I finally watched. I'm still behind. I'm one episode behind, but I did watch episode one, and totally in line with your comments on it, which is it's back. It's doing great work, and I feel, again, we don't know until we see the whole season, but I feel like I'm the same way I felt last year, which is I know it's super weird. It is totally super weird, and yet I feel like I have a trust in the show playing fair, and that what I'm seeing is not just nonsense. What I'm seeing has meaning. And over the course of watching the show, I will understand the meaning of what I'm seeing. Cause season one, that's absolutely was the case.
Yeah, exactly. It has to be tethered at some point. We've talked about that too, which is what we think sets it apart from Twin Peaks in some way, or certainly I do. It's like, it's tethered to some kind of logic. There's a point, and it's important to have a point.
I think people who like Twin Peaks will, you know, they can look at it and say, well, what does it mean? You know, and they can have that exploration. I feel like season one of Legion anyway, everything we saw, the show told you what it meant in some way. You had to use your brain a little bit, but it was all there. And I think that's the rule that Noah Hawley is giving himself here, is to be as bizarre in some ways as possible. There's the whole John Hamm narration of little parables and stuff that's inside the show. There's like the people, the stuff shot upside down where the people are like sleeping, kind of sitting, standing up. And it's just, there's a lot of weird stuff in there, but I feel like it all is going somewhere and it actually does mean something. So I know it's not for everybody, but I'm happy that it's back.
Yeah, visually fun.
You got Game of Thrones holding number seven. It's gonna fall out of eligibility at some point here, because I think it's not coming back until next year. But you know, it's nice to be reminded. And you know, your point is, this isn't just watch it today necessarily. It's like stuff that's current that you should check out. And yeah, if you haven't checked out Game of Thrones, how could you not put that on the list? What's wrong with you? Get up to speed now. I did a calculation at some point that if you started now, you'd have to watch multiple episodes of Game of Thrones a week in order to be caught up before the finale. I think that's actually true. So if you haven't watched might want to, I need to redo that calculation, but it's going to be back in less than a year, and I think there are like 70 episodes or something like that. You know, you can do the math. It's, if you want to get started, you got a serious binge ahead of you if you want to be caught up for the finale. So,
and it's one of the few series where I would, you know, I mean, we may have even said this once or twice before, but it's one of the few series where I could just randomly pick an episode and rewatch it and enjoy it for its newness.
Yep.
You know, it's still fun to watch.
Yeah, if I can find the time, I actually kind of want to do a rewatch before it comes back of the whole thing, because I have picked episodes here and there, but I have not gone back to the start and played it forward, and that would be kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, definitely.
You got The Leftovers again, victory lap, it's done, it's over. Yep. But you know, giving it the time it deserves in the sun.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to change anybody's mind at this time. If they haven't watched it, they probably gotta start at the beginning and get through it, as everybody should. So, but it's there for those of us who watched it and loved it. Still, another series I can kind of put in, but it's definitely got a spiritual and emotional side that's really heavy. So, be prepared for that.
So we got now a couple new entries mm-hmm. that I find really interesting. So you've got The Looming Tower on Hulu in at number 9.
Yeah, I just, you know, I think we'll get to one of the other aspects of these shows that I want to talk about, too. But The Looming Tower is like, the acting in it is, man, it is so good. And I was thinking about it. You know how, like, I wouldn't do it. But there's people who say, you know what, I just like a good procedural every now and then. Like, I just want to watch Law and Order and not think and know that I get a competent show. And an hour later, I'm done folding my laundry and I'm mm-hmm. good. And I don't have time to do that. But I got to say this about The Looming Tower. It is like, it's not like, other than its spectacular acting, it's not breaking tons of ground as far as like video effects or the writing is not. I mean, the writing is really solid, but it's not like, you know, way off the charts. So what you're getting when I watch Looming Tower, I get this really good feeling of like, okay, everybody involved in this knows how to really make a good television show. They know how to act extremely well. The writing is very solid. The pacing of the series, the way it's shot, everything is everything's sort of spot on. And I like that there's nuances to it. So it's a new one for me. Because Dan had reviewed it, and I'm all in.
Yeah, it's really, so for people who don't know, this is basically leading up to 9/11. Mm-hmm. It's things that you know, it's like the lessons not learned and the road not taken about the warning signs before 9/11 happened.
Yep.
Okay, Collateral on Netflix is next, another new one.
Yes, I was in the running. I had was going to do Collateral, and then I think Collateral had ended up being done out of either Tribeca or Toronto or one of those ones well in advance. I can't remember. They're blurring together, but it was out of somewhere else, and I believe. And it's quite the gem. It, you know, it's only a four-parter, but David Hare wrote it, and Carey Mulligan is great in it. And oh man, I don't know. It's just like, there's something about, I love how quick and easy it is, but it's also something like, you know, the cast is tremendous. Every actor in it's so good. I kind of laughed when I watched it. I was like, okay, this is the, you know how we talk about like, oh, there's only 8 actors in England and they're in everything. Well, this seems to be the group that is like the next generation of in everything. John Sim's been in everything as well, but like this group is, you know, before they become super old, they're all in this moving forward. A lot of good stars in this, but just super well done for what it is, and easily digestible.
All right, Detectorists, we already mentioned, still on the list.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna just say, you know, I'm waiting for that reunion special anytime.
Yeah, exactly.
Another new one at number 12 though, AMC's The Terror.
Yeah, I know some people have been unkind to The Terror.
It's Carey Mulligan. That's the thing, isn't it? Like, if Carey Mulligan's in a thing, there it goes. It's on the list.
Well, the thing that I was here's with the thing. With The Terror is, this fits the role where when I'm looking at something in the peak TV era, I like the fact that it's totally different. You know what I mean? It's like when you look at Collateral, it's like, as I mentioned, Collateral is a cop genre, and I don't need any more of those, but I certainly like one that's got everything in it and it's super well done. But the reason that I like The Terror is because visually it's like nothing else, or at least, I mean, not that you've never seen anything on television or film like this, because you probably have. I'm sure Master and Commander in on ice would be kind of a maybe way to say it.
Yeah. But, yeah. No, it's a ship caught in the ice. This is based on that Dan Simmons book. So it's a bunch of, you got a bunch of sailors in an extreme situation.
Yeah. And, again, you look at it, it's visually really interesting. And the soundscape on it is maybe as good as anything I've at least noticed. I think you can, when a soundscape, when you put the sound of a series together, and it stands out, then it's doing something really good or really bad, I guess, if they're making a bunch of screeches. But Breaking Bad was like a master series at sound and visuals. But Terror, the sound in The Terror is like, I love it. Like, there's minimalism there, and it's haunting. And like, there's a sound now that gets me, is that creaking sound of the wood creaking as the ice is pressing in on it. And I just, I don't know. I love it. But it's visually, it's got such a great gray, black, and white palette. And it's two ships stuck in the ice about, I guess probably a couple of football fields from each other. And then it's just, there's a big bad out there. But the acting is great. It's such a great cast.
And just looking at the cast, yeah, Jared Harris and Tobias Menzies, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, yeah. All right, I'll check it out. See, this is the beauty of this, is that you look at the list. This is why the power rankings work, Tim. This is why. As you look, see, and you're like, it's not just a positive review. It's number 12. It changes everything.
It's very high.
Last week, we talked about Howard's End. It does mm-hmm. pop in at number 13. You get your costume drama, historical stuff. It's got Haley Atwell. Like, lots of reasons to like it.
Yeah, that's a lot of new stuff on the list, and they're all good. They're all rock solid.
Then some things we've talked about before that you just want to remind people of: Get Shorty, which, as you said, way better than anyone would expect it to be.
Yeah.
Halt and Catch Fire, which mm-hmm. again is one of those things like Victory Lap, taking the victory lap. Well done,
absolutely.
Job well done.
Mm-hmm.
Better Call Saul, Lest We Forget.
Lest We Forget. You can't keep that one out.
No, just because it hasn't been on in a little while. It loses a little steam, but it's still there. It's still present, as is everything on Netflix ever is still present. So Mindhunter, still on the list. If you missed it, it's still there. It's still available. You didn't watch it the first week it was on. It's still there. And Ozark on Netflix, which we talked about a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then that brings us to The Deuce on HBO. Again, another little reminder that mm-hmm. it's worth a watch. And Altered Carbon on Netflix. I'm back on that now. We were kind of like several parentheses down in other shows, and now we've kind of backed it all the way back up to Altered Carbon. So we're back going with that again.
Mm-hmm. Solid. Mm-hmm.
Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams, which is something you like, and I like you addressed the Black Mirror issue head on, which is like, look, I like Black Mirror. Not everything needs to be compared to Black Mirror, and this is entertaining. So
yeah,
and we've talked about it. It's an anthology. You know, find a story topic that amuses you. And watch that one.
Yeah, definitely, and that's 21 on the list.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. You know,
that's pretty good.
And the thing I struggled with, and there's a lot of, like, you look at The Deuce and Better Call Saul. You can't take those off. You know, you can't take Halt and Catch Fire off. And I don't know what's going to get them off. I really struggled. You and I talked about this briefly before we started. I really struggled with, like, the ones that I took off were Stranger Things, Black Mirror, Mr. Robot, Fargo, and The Handmaid's Tale. Those are all really good shows.
All good shows. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
You know, because then you're looking at, like, had I kept those.
Yeah, 30 shows on the list.
Yeah. Then it's going to end up being my end of the year best of list. And so I was like, how am I going to now... take this concept that we have and, like, keep it fresh. And so I was really thinking about, like, mood, because, you know, like, being able to stick in a Game of Thrones, you know, and watch another episode there, or and go, oh my God, that's so good. In this instance, I actually was thinking about Mindhunter, which we didn't really mention much, but I saw a still of Mindhunter and I thought, oh my God, yeah, that was so great. And I went back and I put Mindhunter on and I just watched a few scenes of a different couple episodes, and it got me, this is a weird feeling, but it got me super motivated for television. Mindhunter did. I was like, it was so good. Yes, I've already seen every single episode. Now I need to keep telling people to watch it. Oh, I do that already in the power rankings. Well, then, okay. And so it came to this idea of, like, you know, sometimes it's about mood, because we have all these shows that we can see anytime we want to. So I wanted to write about, like, what can keep some of these on and what can drop them off, because Fargo didn't do anything wrong. Fargo, in my mind, it just seems to be a show that seemed to be on ages ago. And I have a 1 hour, or sorry, 1 year window,
yeah,
but it seemed to be on ages ago. I love it. There's not much I can more say about it. I think people should be watching it. You can hear my dog growling in the background.
Yeah.
But, you know, I felt like a new sense of vitality for like something like Mindhunter. I'm currently watching Netflix, so I'm still in on that. And I just felt like there's a couple of legacy series like Better Call Saul and Halt and Catch Fire that I just wasn't ready to take off yet.
Yeah.
But I did mention that I think when it gets warmer out there, because weather affects it, I think, you know, when you get a little hot and you're a little irritable, like four episodes of Collateral and you know you're going to be done, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Killing Eve, really fun series with an assassin and a great acting, and it kind of moves at a brisk pace. Absolutely, I'm all in. So Legion, like a triptastic little thing that kind of like keeps you going. Absolutely, those would be ones that you'll want to watch. I cannot say the same for Halt and Catch Fire, a series that you and I both really love, but like I can't say that I would be driven in the depths of summer to stick that one back in.
Makes sense.
So.
All right, let's move on and talk about your big review that ran this week for a big show that's debuting next week, Westworld Season 2. I'm very excited by it. We got some letters, too, I should say, in case you haven't seen this. The producers went on Reddit and said they were going to release a video that detailed the synopsis of the plot of Season 2 because they were tired of leaks, so they were just going to leak it themselves and then ask everybody in the community to keep it a secret, which actually there led to some interesting people having the conversation of like, would it be better to just let the plot synopsis out because the journey is the reward? I think the answer is probably no, because people will ruin it for everybody. But the counterexample would be Game of Thrones. A lot of people tried really hard to not reveal book spoilers for the people who are watching TV. Anyway, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. The video they've released is brilliant. It basically starts looking like a synopsis, and then very rapidly, Evan Rachel Wood is singing Never Gonna Give You Up, and it's a Rickroll. And then there's like 18 minutes of a dog playing the piano, and that's it. I think it was an interesting idea. How's the reality of Season 2 of Westworld?
The reality is excellent. I have seen 5 episodes, and I'm already a huge fan of it. Dan and I have talked about this before. Dan is not a very big fan of it, so I take it. And next time he and I are going to do a counter back and forth, and I'm sure I'll be the strong endorser on it. But I actually really love Westworld. It did really well in my end of the year poll, and I wanted it to be good, and I love the fact that it has opened these worlds up. It's not a huge spoiler to like as I noted in my review, that if you watch the show, it's not a spoiler to know that basically this thing is, the hosts slash the artificial intelligence, the machines, if you will, they're rising up. It's an age old sci-fi thing. They're getting to be a little bit more sentient, and they're going to rise up, and there's some payback to come, which is a little, it's not just robots trying to kill people because they're robots. It's because they've been abused at Westworld, and they're going to take some revenge.
That's the brilliance of the whole first season, is that it's Westworld. It's going to be about a robot uprising. But they spend an entire season giving you a lot of detail of who they are and why they would rise up. And I feel like that sets it apart from most kind of killer robot stories that we read or see a movie about or see a TV show about.
Yes, that's a great point. More time to develop characters and backstories, which I think not only serves, some people might have been like, let's go already. Let's unleash them onto the world. But what it does is you get so much nuance into their characters that there's so much more reverberation into the second season. And so I watched it with some excitement. I would say, I'll just quickly say that the other part of it that's not, I don't think is a reveal, is we knew that there was going to be a samurai element. And last year people were calling it Samurai World. Well, the official term is Shogun World. And so,
right in the last episode, they briefly go through the backstage of SW, and there are a bunch of samurai guys there. And so, it's cool that they're picking that up, because that was, that was the question of like, is this going to be a thing, or is this just a little Easter egg? And it sounds like it's going to be a thing.
It's going to be a thing. Great. And I got to tell you, I'm really excited for that part, because, fans of the show will know right off the bat. I'm going to have a little bit of a asterisk in a minute, but I don't want to drop it right now. But fans of the show are going to be really excited about Season 2, because it moves at a very brisk pace.
It's good.
It's learned some lessons from Game of Thrones, in that it's now becoming a much more complicated story, where they're doing multiple story, like A, B, C, and C storylines. You have people in different directions, so they're not all interacting. Everybody's basically fanning out all over the park. And of course, part of it is, not only in the book that originated everything, but there's been some, there's already been discussion that there are multiple parks there.
Right.
Shogun World being one of them. I think that there's there's been reference to that there's at least four more. And I think that the, I don't, you know, Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan are on record as saying that there's a couple that they might not use. But I think to me, that gives them a little bit, as the creators of the TV series, it gives them a little latitude, much like Game of Thrones, how they went in a different direction, that they can create their own world that maybe wasn't in Michael Crichton's book, or even alluded to in a book or a line. They could create whatever world they want to. So that opens up a great world of possibilities, as you know. But what I really loved about this series, Jason, as season two went, is it's going at a frantic pace. It is everybody's loose. And they're going in opposite directions. Dolores is going somewhere else, and Maeve is going somewhere else. Their paths will cross a couple of times, but they're going in opposite directions. There's a beefed up role for Charlotte Hale, who is Tessa Thompson. She's really good, and people might know her as Janelle Monáe's girlfriend in all these videos that have just popped up recently. And she's got a strong role. So you have three very strong female roles. Plus, you've got Jeffrey Wright still going strong. In fact, he's, you know, it's all, a lot of that is going, a lot of the storyline, he's kind of the, I don't know, he's, as Bernard, you know, Bernard was such a central character in season one, and he's still there. It's creating these three trifectas for these powerful women, but Bernard is also, a lot of these storylines are running through him. And they take Bernard's story as the episodes go on, and they add little layers that are like, that's interesting. Like, what does that mean? You get little glimpses of Bernard doing things where you're like, that's different, which is really good. And so there's a chaos atmosphere. And then at the same time, in all these storylines, you have the Man in Black and William flashing forward and flashing backwards. And even as even more episodes come out, they're flashing even farther forward, where maybe we're getting a glimpse of what Westworld will look like as it ends. So it's insanely ambitious, and that's before they even get to Shogun World. So, like, once Shogun World comes in, it's like I laughed because I had my hands on top of my head, and I was thinking, okay, this is incredibly awesome. I love the idea of samurais now being in there, and there's some very good, funny moments in it. And there's also, you know, it's tons of violence and swordplay and stuff like that. But as conceptually as a series and as a critic reviewing it, I said, okay, I love this. You just stacked four or five really ambitious ideas on top of each other. You know, flashing forward and flashing backward at the same time that you are, and hints both ways. Like, there's big hints about future and motivation as you go forward and backwards with the William and the Man in Black. There's also, like, you know, adding Shogun to these three existing storylines of everybody kind of fleeing is kind of amazing. And the idea that maybe some of the parks could bleed into each other in the future is really exciting to me, because I think that would be something, something really, really fun to watch. So yeah, really fun, really ambitious. And for the most part, they pull it off. My one caveat, the little asterisk I'm mentioning, is that the first episode is a little clunky, unfortunately, because that's the first one, right? Like, and you know, the last episode was on in late December of 2016. So that's a really long time to have people wait for this one to come around. And I think what HBO is trying to do here, Jason, is they're trying to have it both ways. They're trying to say, okay, well, what if people have never watched this? And it's been December 2016 was the finale. They've heard about it and they know it's back and they want to come to it. We're going to basically throw some exposition into the front of it. And it'll actually be really helpful for people who are already fans of the show. Well, no, actually, it's not helpful. It's clunky. And I was really disappointed in a number of scenes where it was basically just Dolores doing exposition about, you know, the hosts and the moral stuff that happened and the payback that's coming. It was way too on the nose. That said, it gets over itself pretty quickly and moves out of that first episode onward and then doesn't look back. I have to say, that first hour that I watched it, I was like, because you never want a series like this that you really like to have a trip up. And it was definitely tripping all over itself in that first episode. Not the entirety of it, but a couple of pretty big chunks. And I was like, I don't like this. But they've corrected it. I've watched 5 episodes. And, you know, there's stuff that's down the line. There's a lot of Easter eggs and surprises that we can talk about when they pop up. And people will be debating whether the series should have gone in that direction. But for me, I think creatively, it's doing the right thing. It's racing to the future at a frantic pace, and it's really fun to watch.
It's great. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I'll gird myself for episode 1, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Just when she does her little monologues about, like, you know, like, oh, and then you'd be like, yep. Well, that's a good summation.
We said we wanted recaps. I guess this is what we get.
Yeah.
Before we go to the letters, we got just a small number of letters. I want to mention one piece of news, which is that there was news this week that, in the series of series, returning recycled series where they've relaunched them after many years away, that this is the in vogue thing for networks right now. The latest one may be Mad About You, the Paul Reiser, Helen Hunt sitcom that was on NBC in the Seinfeld era, basically. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I mention this because it actually answers a question that we had a week or two ago, which is, what's a show that I watched for a very long time and never watched the end? Because stories about how they did this episode where they flash forward 25 years and they've broken up, but then they get back together and live happily ever after, apparently is how the show ended, which, like Roseanne and most of the X-Files, quite frankly, they'll just pretend didn't happen.
Yeah, exactly.
But I thought, I was like, oh yeah, because you see what happened is late in that series run, they went from being a romantic comedy to they wanted to kind of like more realistically portray a marriage that was in trouble. And so there were like hints of potential infidelity and they started kind of lying to each other. And I was talking to a couple people who used to watch it just like I did. And they all said the same thing, which was like, yeah, I stopped watching at that point because it made me really uncomfortable. And it was not why I was watching that show.
Yeah, that's what NBC didn't realize. And that we were watching it for Mad About You, not Mad At You.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically When Harry Met Sally, the television series. And I love that movie. And I think that there's a place for that kind of show. And I got married about the same time as that show came on the air, which was about newlyweds. So it was, you know, it was a pretty good fit. And that's what I'll say about it is I'm not gonna roll my eyes at this because, you know, the report I read said that if they come back, what they want to do is tell a story about being a couple that's been married for 25 years and is now they're now empty nesters because their kid went off to college. And as somebody who's got, you know, a kid in high school and a kid just about to enter high school who's been married 24 years, that sounds kind of interesting because that is soon going to be my life too. Again, It's hard to put the genie back in the bottle, but apparently they watched what went on with Will and Grace, and they're like, well, we could do that. Why don't they pay us to do that? And so here we go. Every show you've ever seen will come back. That's now what we know. It's like a Stephen King novel. Like they always come back. The out of the grave into the network offices. Anyway, Mad About You. Never saw the end. So that's my answer. My revised answer. Never saw it. Heard it was terrible. Never saw it. just a couple. Donnie in the 206 wrote in to say, I'm curious to know your thoughts on Netflix canceling Everything Sucks less than 2 months after it premiered. In these times of confusion, can they really determine if something is a hit after a month and a half? I didn't get around to watching it, but I was curious about it and would have watched it eventually. And now I won't bother and it will collect dust in the Netflix graveyard. Love to your mothers, Donnie in the 206. The Netflix graveyard. Tim, has it come to this where it's like network and cable people saying you need to watch the show on day one or in the first 3 days because those are the ratings that matter? Is this Netflix telling us that, you know, if you are intrigued by a show, you better watch it soon, otherwise it's going to die?
No, not at all. That would be a formal change of their entire principles, but and I don't expect that to happen. I think what happens is, if anything, it makes me even, you know, I was already exponentially interested in their ability to garner information, and I want to know what their analytics are. And now I am that much more intrigued because this is to my knowledge the fastest that they've canceled the series. Something must have told them that this was DOA. To my knowledge, it didn't get great reviews. I found it very derivative. And I think if you were to look at the people inside of Netflix, also from a creative standpoint, because there are really creative people who are there. That can't get lost in the factoring in this. Ted Sarandos himself is very creative. I think they probably said, hey, this show we found basically called The End of the Fucking World is amazing. And, you know, we'll probably make a mistake in, you know, milking a second season out of them when it ended perfectly fine in one season. But this other kind of knockoff, Everything Sucks, is what we shouldn't be doing. Like, we should be doing this one over here, but not this one. And probably their analytics were telling them that exact same thing, and they said, okay, we're done. So that's my summation.
Yeah, my guess is that they didn't like it too. I guess that they looked at it and they're like, I don't think this works. And then they looked at the numbers and were like, and the numbers are not good, so let's move on. Like,
yep.
And there's something to be said for that. Although it is a new Netflix, right? Because it used to be that everything got a couple more seasons at Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just you can't be that way anymore. They have too much content.
Yeah. Too much, just too much. All right, let's. I finally finished End of the FXXXing World, by the way.
And
it's great. The end is just bananas, like where they choose to stop the story. But it still made me laugh that was where they chose to stop it. So that was a great little thing. People should check it out.
Kind of it's going to go down. And I think that's I already taught it this semester in my class. It's a series that is instantly teachable for some, basically how to make a great TV show.
Yeah. Yeah. It was brilliant. People should definitely check it out. Let's see. Oh yeah. Drew from the 937 wrote in to say that one of our best resources that we really like to point people to find out what shows were on when and where and all of that and streaming is shutting down. Fan TV was bought by Rovio, which is now TiVo, and they're shutting it down as of April 15th. So look up your shows in the next 2 days, because then Fan TV is dead.
Wow, did they just buy them to kill them because they're a competitor?
Apparently they bought them for their data, and they're integrating the data into their service and taking the Fan TV product off the market, which sucks. So I've got two recommendations. These came in from some I did some web searches, and I looked through some email and all that, and the two recommendations that I found are Tracked TV, TRAKT.TV, and TV Time. And they both have TVTime.com, and they both have apps that let you put in your shows, and it tells you when the shows are on. What I don't know is the best resource for you to put in, like, a movie especially, or a TV show, and say, just where is this right now? Is this Amazon, Netflix, Hulu? You know, is it just for purchase on iTunes and Amazon? Is it on a channel somewhere? I think these things do that with TV shows. I'm not sure if there are resources for things like movies, which I often do that, where I want to know, like, I want to watch this movie. Is something I'm already paying for going to give me this movie? And I don't know if these will do that.
So, and what was the second, after Tracked, what was the second
TVTime.com, another app that you can get.
Okay.
But we're going to, so if you've got other suggestions for how to find things, like where they're streaming and stuff like that, send them on in, because Fan TV is dead. Okay, this one is Clive in the UK, the +44, with a note about Legion. He said, you said in the podcast it was confusing that the mutants from Summerland were working with Division 3 in Season 2, but in Chapter 8, several scenes from the episode, this is the finale last year, suggest things are working toward a detente between the two sides. Near the end of the episode, David says to Clark, we're going to need to work together now, and Clark replies, I know, I'll talk to them. To me, the fact that the mutants were working with Division 3 in Chapter 9 was no surprise at all. Of course, I did binge watch the Legion Blu-ray on the weekend before Season 2 started, so it was pretty fresh in my mind. Clive, I think you answered your own question here. Which is that after a year, we kind of forget what happened. I'll tell you, the number one clue for me, Tim, that they wouldn't be returning to Summerland is that they moved the show from Vancouver to LA. And so all those, all those set locations are gone.
are gone. Yeah, which would also explain that, like, it's one thing to say, yeah, we might work together, and the next is like, we're all in the same building together. We're living together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still a funny moment, but I do, yeah, great show. Yeah. Great show. And I want to close with this. Our friend Luke in Sydney sent us a link, and here's the link, Tim.
To something dangerous.
It is a video of a snake that is trying, they're trying to remove from a tree outside a school in Australia. And the guy reaches with a stick for the snake. And you know what the snake does, Tim? It leaps from one tree to another tree, and they can't find it in that tree.
Why do people try to haunt me? That's so so scary and dangerous.
Here's the money quote. One of the janitors went to relocate it themselves. It took a big dive bomb out of the tree, and then it took off, and they couldn't find it. It relocated itself. Great. Great. You know what that means? That means that snake is still out there.
It relocated itself.
Yes, from trees to trees, just jumping around, go the snakes. In the Brisbane Times, that link. Thanks, Luke.
Ooh, scary.
Yeah, it's not a drop bear, but it's a snake, so it's worse.
It's scary. Scary times.
All right, so we will be back next week. I think that's our plan, and we're gonna work on when we're gonna do. We haven't done our draft for the members only, but we're gonna work on that. We'll let you know on this show when that gets posted, and if you have not become a member yet, perhaps we can tempt you with that once we get it posted. But I think that's all for now. I think we kept it relatively tight and bright.
We did. Absolutely.
All right. Well, here's how you reach us. These are what we call the numbers. They're not numbers. They're email addresses.
Well, podcast. We call the numbers.
I don't know. It's a thing from the old show that people shouldn't go back and listen to. podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. Send us an email or tweet at us at TVTM, because Twitter lets you type like a whole like giant thing in a tweet now. So why not send that tweet to us? And we will be back next week. But until then, Tim, have a great weekend.
All right, you too, Jason. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.